The Cosmic Shed.
Hello and welcome to The Cosmic Shed. Today's episode is all about Black Panther. I'm Andrew and with me today is...
Ty.
And we have two other people in the shed with us, but I'm not going to introduce them to you just yet, because coming later in the podcast, we have an interview with Josiah Zahner. Now, Josiah Zahner is most well known, I think, for injecting himself with some kind of biotech thing to make himself into the Hulk, give himself super strength. I don't know quite what he was doing. We're going to hear a lot from him later. But first, he called his company The Odin.
I actually run a company called The Odin. We sell supplies for genetic engineering to people who want to do stuff at home. We also sell supplies as like to educational institutions, colleges, universities, like grammar schools and other schools and stuff like that. We're really just trying to make genetic engineering accessible to people and get people educated on DNA and like become DNA literate, like what it is, what you can do with it, what all the cool things are.
Okay.
And is genetic engineering really something you can just do at home?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting, right? So people think this stuff is super complicated and, you know, it's something that can only be done in big labs or you need really expensive equipment. It's not necessarily the equipment that keeps holds you back from doing genetic engineering. It's more the knowledge. But really, all you need to do genetic engineering is mix two liquids, right? That's it. You mix something with DNA and something with like bacteria or yeast or an organism, and that organism will take up the DNA and use it if you designed it correctly. And it's genetic engineering. It's just mixing liquids, basically.
Yeah, but...
But is there not a danger of contamination or stuff going wrong?
Totally.
Yeah, but higher at home or?
Oh, totally. No, like, you know, this is why, you know, I try to stay away from encouraging people to do things like this. Me, I'm a PhD. Right? I got my PhD at the University of Chicago, you know, amazing university. After that, I worked at NASA and their, you know, genetic engineering department for 2 years. Right? So I kind of have an idea of what I'm doing, generally.
Some would say.
So, you know, I've worked with all these things in professional labs and have a lot of experience with it. So when I'm doing an experiment and testing it on myself, I understand the risks, I understand the safety, I understand the purity I need, the concentrations, all these different things. And that's taken into account when I do this. So it's like, it's definitely something that is dangerous and there are safety issues and I don't encourage people to like do this by themselves. But when you think of like, what is the future in the realm of possibilities of things that people can do, it is in that realm of possibility that people could in 5, 10, 20 years be using DNA on themselves in one way or another.
Why the Odin?
For me, it obviously has kind of like a superhero-y feel, right? The Odin, like, that seems like to me a place that like superheroes would go hang out. It's like, where are you going to hang? We're going back to our, you know, special secret hideout, the Odin. Number two, like, God's playing God, right? Like, you're playing God, you're messing with DNA. And I don't know what that means or anything like that, but if you were playing God, you know, you'd want to play act the coolest god out there, obviously, and that's Odin, right? I mean, no offense to all the other gods, but Odin could probably beat them all up, you know? You know what I'm saying? He was a pretty badass guy.
Thanks, Josiah, and obviously an awful lot more from him later. I did say there are two people in the shed, other than me and Ty, two new people to the shed. I'm going to start with Alex. Alex Lathbridge.
That's my name.
Excellent. And I'm going to read from your website.
Oh, sick.
Yeah,
man.
You wrote it.
Well, I wrote it some time ago, and I wrote it, not going to lie, sleep deprived. So
okay, let's see if it's still true. Alex Lathbridge is a peptide biochemist and computational biologist studying for a PhD in novel peptide therapeutics at the University of Bath. In 2014, he graduated with a first class honours degree.
This is too much. You can't do this. Look, okay, yeah, I know. This is all me. I did write all of this.
Yeah.
But you took the driest page on my website. Literally, the about me.
Sorry, Alex. But he has been described as the UK's best scientist turned rapper.
Yeah, there was like one of us.
Okay.
So,
yes.
By default.
Excellent. He mixes science, comedy and hip-hop on his YouTube channel. Before his PhD, Alex worked for the BBC, sporting programmes such as Horizon and creating explosive online content. Alex, welcome to the Cosmic Shed.
I like that... I feel really welcome, but I like that you chose the one half of my About Me that is the driest. That's like the, oh yeah, people don't read that left-hand side. People actually go psychologically to the right-hand side first,
yeah.
Where all the interesting stuff is.
Yeah.
And then they go back, oh, and they read a bit more that's on the left. So why would you do that to me, Andy?
It's because, my question. Honest answer, because I looked at those words about your science, I didn't understand half of them, I thought I'd just read them.
Okay, well, thank you, because it puts you and I firmly in the same camp. I don't understand a lot of my science.
Okay.
But I do it anyway, out of love and Stockholm Syndrome.
What, tell me about your PhD briefly.
You know how your body has proteins in it? Your body has proteins in it. It's not cosmic, but, you know, it's on brand for me. And so there are types of molecules called transcription factors, which essentially act like cellular traffic lights. And the stuff I'm interested in are the sort of the molecular traffic lights, the transcription factors that control pathways and processes involved with cancer. So if we can find a way of turning off and on deregulated molecules that are involved in cancer, we can potentially have an interesting way of targeting cancer.
Cool.
And that is what I try and do. And I'm in my final 12 months, and I am shitting myself.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Science.
Thank you for finding the time in your last 12 months to come and sit in the Cosmic Shed. What do you think of the shed?
I love it. It's nouveau. But it has a rustic charm. It also has heaters and tea. So, people listening and wanting a bit of behind the scenes, the tea is very good.
Yeah, it is good. It's Yorkshire tea. They don't sponsor us, but Slow Brew Club Coffee do.
And we're all drinking tea.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's late. And it's really, really cold. The other person joining us in the shed for the first time is Hannah Bestwick.
Hi,
Hannah. I'm going to describe you as the person who also presents the Love and Science radio show with me.
Yes, that's me.
And also the co-host of the XX Science podcast, which I think, if I understand it, sort of looks at science in science fiction and women in science fiction.
Yeah, pretty much. Cool. Yeah.
Is the XXX all about adult?
We haven't quite got to that one yet.
Hannah, welcome to the Cosmic Shed.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
What
is all these beautiful posters?
Is it how you imagined it?
No.
Okay.
Not at all, but I'm quite pleased with it.
Okay.
Good shed.
This podcast is about Black Panther. Ty, tell us about the film.
Black Panther. Black Panther is the 18th entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And basically picks up on the adventures of T'Challa, the Black Panther, the new king of Wakanda, after his father was killed in the events of Captain America Civil War. Black Panther, at the moment, is breaking box office records all over the place. It has made $700 million worldwide in like 9 days. It's like made double what Justice League made in 3 months, which goes to show you why this film is both A, culturally and socially relevant today, and B, just great.
Yeah.
It's great. So, for those of you that haven't seen it, it's directed by Ryan Coogler, who previously directed Fruitvale Station and Creed. So he rejuvenated the Rocky franchise. And this is his third reunion with Michael B. Jordan, who in this film plays Eric Killmonger Stevens. The villain of the piece. I'm not going to go into too many spoilers about that, but really the focus is on T'Challa, played by Chadwick Boseman of who also played Jackie Robinson in 42, the new king of Wakanda. So Wakanda, for those of you that may have just heard people yelling Wakanda forever for the past couple of weeks, Wakanda is an African country that posits that, imagine if European colonialism hadn't happened. Imagine if a meteorite filled with, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, vibranium, the most powerful metal known to man, crashed in Wakanda, and an entire African civilization built its nation up around it, managing to advance its technology and advance everything, and therefore keep itself hidden and secret from the Europeans just ravaging the continent, and all this time keeping their technology and all their secrets safe from the outside world. While that may be the focus of the film, everything about the film couldn't be more important. You have not just a strong black lead, but he is a king. This isn't about black power. This is about black glory. This is like a civilization that posits an African country as it should have been. And it's not just strong male characters. You've got some of the best female characters on screen that I've seen all year. They're generals, they're engineers, they're spies, and they're not, you know, just they're tagged onto the story. They all have an agency to the plot. And it's fantastic and deserves to win all the box office glory that it's currently winning. And I wouldn't be surprised if Marvel shuffle everything around and just keep making Black Panther films instead of Iron Man films once they can no longer afford Robert Downey Jr. Which they can't. They're killing him off in the next Avengers film. This is clearly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But enough about
who's
me.
Who's going to get in the suit? That's the question. Alex.
Shuri.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be Shuri.
Of course it is. It has to be. Alex, what you're here, I think, my version of why you're here, is because I saw you at the Green Man Festival.
Okay.
I thoroughly enjoyed your thing.
Christ. Thank you.
You bought tickets for our Andy Weir event.
Yeah, I mean, I have to, you know, come and see the guy who wrote The Martian.
Yeah.
And his new book that I've definitely read.
Okay.
Completely, definitely.
Yeah, you read it from
front to back. Yeah,
front to back, yeah.
Yeah. Artemis.
All of the words.
All of the words,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, excellent. Yeah.
Only the best words.
And I took advantage of that and saw your name on the thing and thought, oh, I'll email him, see whether he fancies come to the shed, which I did, or maybe Facebook.
Facebook. You slid into the DMs.
Okay. Yeah. I slid you a quiet DM, would you like to come to my shed?
It's a strong technique. It's worked for lots of people.
Yes. And you said, yes, I would like to come to your shed. And I said, what film would you like to do? And you said...
Black Panther, it's exactly as Ty said, it's amazing. It's incredible. And for me, as a black man, it has so many layers. And it's the first time I've seen a film that's really had incredibly nuanced black characters as well as incredible world building. I think the latter is something that Marvel's quite good at, but combining the two is incredibly unique, and it's, you know, we didn't get that really with things like Luke Cage or Blade. Hell, definitely not with Catwoman.
Yeah. Who can forget Spawn and Meteor Man?
Ty's doing a lot of references that I'm too young to truly appreciate.
We've discovered that Alex is a child.
Look, black don't crack.
His beard hides his childlike facade.
I'm kidding, black really cracks. I have lots and lots of counselling each week.
Yeah, fair enough. No, but I'm genuinely interested to know, because when you said Black Panther, I'm going to be honest with you, I had to Google it because I didn't know what it was. You were very excited about it. Why? And did it live up to the expectations that you had?
Cool. So,
see all the hype that Harry Potter had, like, in its heyday. Like, all of that. Right. And then, you know, a massive franchise. You know, Harry Potter ostensibly made it okay to be ginger. Right? We all agreed that, right? When you've got something so big that can really tap into people's ideas of what normal is, like, you know, it's normal to see a black engineer, it's normal to see black people in media, and they aren't, it isn't an urban experience, it isn't, you know, this one perspective that we're allowed to show. That's amazing. and to have that with the backing of Marvel, and not only to have that, but to have all the production, like the majority of the production staff, be black, to have these, you know, the cast be black, you're thinking, wow, front and behind the camera, it's real representation.
And that shows. Compare it to Civil War, in which they were like, oh yeah, you know, we had a fight in Lagos, Nigeria. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, are you fucking kidding? You've got a multi-million pound production, right? And you can't get one researcher person, like an intern, to work out how you pronounce Lagos. So yes, there was lots of hype around it, and it has lived up to my expectations. But again, with Marvel, like, my expectations were kind of like, oh fuck, they might fuck it up, they might like do something great and then fuck it up. But yeah, I'm gonna see it again. It'll be the third time I've seen it. I'm gonna see it again, of course. I love it.
Okay.
So good.
A lot of credit has to probably go to Ryan Coogler, because it wasn't just a predominantly black cast and black crew. It was also a very female crew. Mm. The cinematographer was female. The production designer was female. The costume designer was female. Ryan Coogler knew that this wasn't just a film about black people, but also women, because the mythos of the Black Panther comics... you know, laid down by like Christopher Priest and Reginald Hudlin and Ta-Nehisi Coates, it's packed full of strong women. The Dora Milaje aren't just T'Challa's bodyguards, they are Wakanda's special forces. So like in most films you see like elite soldiers or whatever, but never do you see them as like striking, tall, competent, as the film says, Grace Jones type types. And it They're amazing. Everything about the film, from the production design, where it's like, this is a culture that doesn't need guns. They're primitive. You know, they have technology way above everything. That goes from everything to, like, energy to transport. And, it like Alex said, it's about showing people on screen that have never been seen in that, portrayed that way before. So you had Blade. Blade's a superhero film, but Blade was made for like 20 million 20 years ago, and it was an 18 certificate film. It was a niche film for a niche audience.
Is it any good?
Yeah, Blade's great.
Is it?
But Black Panther is a $200 million movie meant for everyone. It's worlds apart. It's completely worlds apart.
You haven't seen Blade?
No.
What? Hang on. Well, Alex, you just said that Blade was the only Wesley Snipes film you'd seen.
Look, okay. Sorry. Let's keep it funky, yeah. Truthfully, I know Wesley Snipes for three things. It's Blade. Being Uncle Wesley on Twitter, and tax evasion. The three things I know him for. Okay. And I feel as though that's him well-rounded as a person, but you haven't seen Blade.
No, I haven't seen Blade.
I haven't seen Starship Troopers.
Oh, I'm surrounded by... doing it.
Let's just move on. Let's move on.
So, yeah, sure, yeah.
Hannah.
Yeah.
What did you come to Black Panther with? Baggage? Did you come to it with expectations? How did you come to it?
I did come to it with expectations. I came to it with expectations for how they were going to portray the women in it, the female characters. And I hadn't heard of Black Panther before I started seeing adverts for it from Marvel. And I read around it, and it just had such good press, and it sounded like we've discussed, they were going to have a lot of female characters that were going to be strong, and not strong in, like, some people think that strong female characters mean that they're just physically very strong and they just kick a lot of ass. Like, strong as in, like, there's depth to those characters, and they exist when the male characters aren't around, and we see that a lot in Black Panther. But it wasn't something I had thought about for a very long time, but I'd very quickly decided I was going to see it after I knew that. I don't really watch much of Marvel's films, because I'm not a huge fan, but I really needed to see this, because it promised some incredible female characters, and I really wanted to see that and be part of it, because there just haven't been many. When I was younger, there were no female characters that I looked up to in films, like, at all. And I... really love the idea that there are going to be young girls who see Black Panther, and these are going to be the strong female characters that they look up to and see themselves reflected in as well. And that's something I was really excited to find out about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's probably why this film will make $1 billion by the end of the week, because it's resonating with so many different people for so many different reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't just appeal to one audience. I mean, for Black people, it's kind of like, oh, it's a film where we're not drug dealers, slaves, or helping, you know, white people get over some life difficulties. For women, it's like, here we are as engineers, spies,
warriors,
whatever.
Yeah. And
for me, I'm half Indian. It's always great to see more cultural representation, because for someone who's Indian, if you see an Asian person in the film, they are either tech support or a terrorist.
Yeah.
That is it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even in Star Trek Discovery, you've got Shazad Latif. He's not all he appears to be. He's literally a sleeper agent.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, this is great. If this is going to start a trend, I'm all on board for where this goes.
Yeah.
I come at this as a middle-aged white man, seeing myself in films a lot. So I don't have that experience of it. What I experience is a brilliant film just as a film. The performances are wonderful, the action sequences are outstanding. Letitia Wright's Shuri is, I think, in every episode of The Cosmic Shed we've mentioned the portrayal of scientists and engineers in films. She does it brilliantly. The passion she shows is amazing. Her love for stuff is brilliant. So many people on the screen own the screen in a really believable and wonderful way. The hilariously named but brilliantly written Killmonger is, he's got a backstory that you can believe in, and he isn't the thing that I hate about the films that I love. So I love these Marvel films, and I love all these superhero films, not all of them, but a lot of these superhero films. What I hate about them is the end of level baddies that you get, and he isn't one of those. He's a real character, and that's utterly brilliant, and I want to see much more of that.
And his plan's completely understandable.
Yeah, totally.
And relatable.
Totally. And Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa, Black Panther, is a reluctant leader, and I bloody love reluctant leaders, and I think we need more of them. And far less of the sort that we have. And you believe in him, and the people believe in him because he's a good man. And too often in the world today, the focus for society seems to be on leadership and good speaking rather than being a good person, and I like to see that. Alex, you want to say something?
I'd follow whoever if they defeated the opposition in ritual combat.
Okay.
let's be honest, like, if you're gonna go on this tangent, I agree with you politically, but you know, this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's ritual combat there.
Yeah.
He could have killed someone and he didn't. I'm going to say spoilers in this, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's
because
fine. Yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen it by now, it's like a week and a half, 2 weeks in.
Yes, good point.
Come on, if someone's going to be a reluctant leader who can still, you know, almost destroy someone much bigger than themselves without the power of the Black Panther,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course you're going to follow them.
Is he a reluctant leader, though? Because he is born into it. He's just kind of changing what previous kings have. He's kind of born into it. He knows that he's the king. He doesn't really show any self-doubt. He happily challenges Eric to combat. He knows who he is. He is the king.
Yeah.
He's just going to have to decide whether the legacy of his father is one that he's going to follow, and whether he is going to jeopardize all of Wakanda, which his ancestors have protected, or the previous kings, and change the course of his country forever.
Okay, what I mean by that is, if you compare him to Killmonger,
but Killmonger just comes in and swaggers everywhere.
Oh, he's awesome.
He is.
He's totally awesome.
All swagger.
But his motivation is believable. It's got a backstory. It's great. But his motivation is to be the king, whereas he is just necessarily the king, and he's got to find his peace with that in order to get there. And I think that is a much better way to end up being a leader. Hannah.
Yeah.
Shuri, you've looked at women scientists in portrayals in science fiction and films.
Yeah.
Where does she fit in that?
honestly, she's pretty new. She's something different that we haven't really seen before. She is way up there. Is this the thing? She is above everyone else.
She's one of the best Disney princesses.
Amazing. She's supposed to be the smartest person in the Marvel Universe. Did I read that right? Or like,
yep.
Yeah? Yeah. She's supposed to be just genius level intelligence. And she's also incredibly young. And she's also got, in a way that other smart people in the Marvel Universe don't have, she's got her stuff together. She's not a mess like Tony Stark is or Bruce Banner. Bruce Banner?
Yeah.
And she is so crucial to the story and the technology that she creates, but she's also like a little shit to her brother, and she can make him laugh, and in a way that like not everybody else can, and she's still got this like wonderful life and light that she brings to the dialogue, and it's just a really lovely representation of somebody who's super smart and in charge and has so much agency and is also so much fun and really relatable and just fantastic.
In the comics, Shuri becomes the Black Panther.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is that going to happen?
I mean, I hope so.
I don't think, not for a while, because literally this is just the second time we've seen Black Panther.
Yeah.
So I would keep Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther for a while. Here's what I would say. In the comics, currently, Riri Williams is Ironheart, who's the new Iron Man. She's a black woman. But rather than just, I was going to say, introduce another black female engineer. Can't have enough of them. But Robert Downey Jr. is probably not going to be in the series for much longer, and it would make sense that you've got this kick-ass female engineer already, and with the events that's going to go on in Infinity War, she can probably take over the mantle of Iron Man and do a much better job than Tony Stark.
Okay. If that doesn't happen, I'm going to be really
pissed off. I would suggest.
Yeah, it sounds good. But I'm just going to...
And then Falcon becomes Captain America, and...
new black racist renaissance.
Yeah, and racist white Twitter has a fit.
Mate, racist white Twitter is my favourite place right now. Honestly, I love it. Between Black Panther doing so well, Cheddar Man. Stormzy at the Brit Awards, Daniel Kaluuya winning a BAFTA, and General Black Excellence. Like, it's... I love it. Like, I don't like the idea...
Oprah.
When Oprah goes against Trump and everything. Like, I don't like the idea that people see black culture as one giant collective, because there's so many different things, whether, you know, you're British, American, African-American, whether you're second generation, if you're West Indian, all these things are so different. The only time that we'll come together is when it's... you know, showing up racist white Twitter. I love it. Oh god. It's like some of my favourite stuff.
Can I say one thing that I think that Black Panther shied away from, I've heard that some of it might have been there and then they trimmed it out.
Yeah,
so in the comics, Io, who's the second in command of the Dora Milaje, who's played by Florence Kasuma, she has a female lover also in the Dora Milaje, and in the comics, they become the Midnight Angels. And I read that it was hinted that a couple of them were in lesbian relationships. And after Thor Ragnarok, where the fact that Valkyrie was also bisexual and that Hela killed her lover, that was kind of skimmed over. I was kind of disappointed that this was also skimmed over, because I feel that Marvel is going to build up to an LGBT character at the moment. I mean, let's face it, they already have it with Captain America and Bucky. Let's not lie to ourselves, people. Yeah, yeah. But it's just that kind of... people don't mind. Just build up to it. At this point, if Disney are willing to spend $200 million on a Black Panther movie, they are fine with making a couple of characters gay. I don't think you should
skim over that. On this. Just because people are gay and there should be gay people in films. And because I'm gay and there's never been characters that I've looked up to in films. And it's like having a character that you identify with in that way as well it would have given me a way to be able to see myself growing up to be like a functional adult gay. Because that wasn't a thing. There was Skins, where it was teenage angsty gay, but I could never envision myself being an adult gay. And having that kind of representation of like a healthy, functioning adult gay relationship in film from a young age would have made such a difference for me as well. And I would like them to take their time to get there, because it's so easy for big films to fall into the bury your gaze trope, where they'll like give you a gay character and then take it away straight away, and they're like, yeah, you had it, but like that's it, that's all we're giving you. So yeah. I would like them to take time to do it more justice, I think.
Which is why I'm surprised they're not kind of drip feeding these characters in. Like, they could have done it with Valkyrie and Io, but instead it's kind of like, if you're looking for that, you'll see it.
Mm. Yeah.
But we're not going to say it because this film's got to play in China and the Middle East and we might upset some people.
Yeah.
So it's there if you're looking for it, but...
Cheddar Man. Give us a little update on Cheddar Man, will you?
Oh, okay. So I'm going to leave the entire timeline of Cheddar Man. So Cheddar Man is one of the oldest specimens found in the UK. Not the oldest. I think that's the Red Lady of Pavlov's dog. I don't know. Again, I'm a scientist, not a geneticist. I don't need to know all these things. But what's really great is that when that first came out, the news, a combination, like, science Twitter and black Twitter sort of coalesced and reached this sort of that bit in that Venn diagram that overlapped, and that was just me. So it was beautiful.
You, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, no, not even Neil deGrasse Tyson, because he doesn't deal with human things. So I had the BBC and Channel 4 like emailing me like, hey, can you come on? I was like, you don't want this. But so with Cheddar Man, they found that this person might have been dark-skinned from 10,000 years ago. And the idea of what race is sort of been... I say turned on its head, but anyone with an ounce of sense sort of knew that was probably like that anyway. So when you look at that guy, he was dark-skinned, but with sort of Eurocentric features, with sort of the bone structure. It doesn't have what you think of as African bone structure, but the hair is sort of... You'd think sort of Middle Eastern, so it's a lot different. It's a real... mix match. It's not what we think of as ethnicity or race today, which is understandable because he's from 10,000 years ago. And this was done through reconstruction after doing some genetic testing on his bone powder. I like to think bone powder is what people in Hollywood call cocaine. That's a nice reference to anyone that's put cocaine on their penis. Now recently they're saying that he maybe he wasn't dark. Maybe he wasn't that dark. And scientists come out saying, well, maybe we don't know. Maybe, you know, we don't understand as much as we think we understand.
Is this just in response to the Daily Mail comments?
Mail comments are some of the best things in the world. Daily Mail
the
comments.
Outrage.
Yo, I love, like, on my podcast, Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? plug, go listen. We had an entire section where we just went through the Daily Mail comments. You had things like... oh, how can you know that he was dark? You know, bones are white. Or, you know, what? People... Yeah, legit. People are like, how can you know? Bones are white. He's white. To things saying, people saying that, oh, this is just a nice narrative for the BBC and other liberal media to push. Oh, this is all fake news, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Show us the DNA evidence. I'm like... When I saw that,
understand it.
I was like, look, I have 6 years plus experience with computational, like, biology and stuff, if not more. I'm doing a PhD in something related to this. If I saw that DNA data, I'd be like, well, these are some numbers. You like numbers? There are a lot of numbers here. I know some of these words. So handing it to, you know... Johnny88 on Daily Mail, don't look too into those numbers. They aren't his year of birth.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's not going to be great. But my favourite comment was, if we're all descended from this person, does that make us all mini Cheddars?
I respect that one.
Yeah. So now they're saying, oh, maybe he wasn't white. Maybe we don't know. I mean, yes, that's perfectly valid. Genetic, like, our understanding of genetics... is very basic, and we're looking back 10,000 years. There's a lot that we don't know. There are a lot of unknown unknowns, I guess. Yeah. But for fuck's sake, let us have this, all right? You have Thor and everything else.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything.
Yeah.
So one scientist has come out saying, oh, maybe we don't know, and people are running with it. Like, oh, it was all lies, this, that, and the other. And it's like, for fuck's sake.
we haven't seen Cheddar Man for a while, and someone else we haven't seen for a while is Andy Serkis, appearing as himself in a film. And I thought he did a good job. It was nice to see him.
I got super into
his rendition of Hathaway.
Again, these references, I just don't care.
What?
Mate.
What is love? Love, baby, don't hurt
me. Oh, that's what they play at clubs at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
In Bath.
Right at the end.
Yeah, to clear people out. It's that, Living on a Prayer, YMCA, and Mr. Brightside.
Yeah.
That will make white people go. Like, they love those songs. Like, I love YMCA too, but the other ones, 500 Miles as well.
There is a good joke I've seen on the internet that with Martin, Bilbo Baggins, Friedman, and Andy Gollum Serkis in the film, they are the Tolkien white guys.
Hey.
And bravo, whoever first came up with that one on the internet.
But no, I got super into his madness as Claw, and he was super believable. And again, spoiler, I did not expect him to be killed off halfway through because he was so strong, right?
He was so crazy, and I thought he was just going to be, the villain, the white villain, and he just died. He's not important.
Not important. <It's> gone.
There's better things to deal with over here. Mm. Yeah, it was amazing.
But I think, you know, when he died, you know, that entire sequence really builds up Killmonger as a villain, and it brings me to sort of another point with Black Panther, that quite a lot of the progress in the film comes from, I want to say, it's built on the backs of black women. You know, you've got Killmonger's girlfriend in the first act, who he just kills. And she was there from the very beginning, from, you know, his heist to freeing him when he's caught in, is it Korea? Killmonger's girlfriend helps and all of that. She got a name. I don't remember her name. Did she even get a name?
I remember reading she was meant to be a character from Luke Cage, and then they realised she's in Luke Cage, and I can't remember what the character was meant to be, but no, it's not important.
But she, because she's not important, she gets killed off, and it's like, whoa, wow, that's kind of sucky. And then everything's sort of really resting on people like Okoye and Shuri, especially with Okoye, Dora Milaje, who's like, oh, hey, you should definitely side with T'Challa, or you should definitely side with Daniel Kaluuya's character, whose name I forget because all I can see him as is Posh Kenneth from Skins. Wakabi, that's it. So, you know, she's got to decide between T'Challa, Killmonger, Wakabi. I really love that depth of character.
Like, especially the scene between Okoye and what's Lupita Nyong'o's character called?
Nakia.
In the throne room, where she's like, I am sworn to protect this country and serve the throne. And Nakia's like, well, I'm going to save the country. I loved that scene. I thought that was great.
It's a really interesting scene as well, because they have such opposing views, like a traditional view and also a view that encompasses going out and like showing Wakanda to the world. But in that scene, it is just the two of them, and they have such a stark difference of what they think they should do. So Nakia's loyal to T'Challa, and she goes with the Queen Mother and Shuri. But Okoye has this loyalty to her role in the Dora Milaje, and that importance to her loyalty to her country and her belief in her country's strength in its secrecy, and they go their separate ways, and they don't hate each other. They're not pitted against each other. And so often in films you see like two female characters and they're pitted against each other as like competition for a man's attention, and they don't have that, and it's there's respect there that is really, really nice to see as well. Like it was really good.
Nakia in general, I think she was the character that I clocked about halfway through the film, through one of her conversations. I was like, oh shit, this film's passed the Bechdel test.
Yeah,
I was like,
already.
Yeah. I was like, I don't even know how to pronounce the Bechdel test because I've never seen it happen before. But this film has lots of different perspectives depending on who you are as a black person. So if you are black African, you're going to see it in one way. If you are, you know, African American, you're going to see it in a very different way. And if you're from the diaspora, you know, so your parents were immigrants from Africa, first or grandparents, so first generation, second generation, you're going to see it in a completely different way because your relationship with, with the continent and with the idea of an Afrofuturistic country is like completely
different.
I read a good article by Mark Bernardin, who's a black film writer, and he said the reason this is connecting with so many African-American people is because, you know, if my dad's from India, I know where he's from in India. If your family was from Italy, you know where they were from in Italy. But for African-American families who are just taken en masse from Africa and don't have a connection to a specific part, it's just the continent, and they don't know where they were taken from. Seeing a country like Wakanda, it's, they can connect to it more because they don't have that personal legacy. It's just my descendants were slaves, and before then they came from Africa, because no one's really sure. African Americans don't have the same cultural identity, is not the right word, but cultural legacy to hang their hat on like Europeans can. And that's why Black Panthers had such a resonated so much.
Like, you know, I see people like, you know, even the way in which certain characters are portrayed, you know, vocally, you know, it's really great that, you know, T'Challa and a lot of the people who aren't the Jabari have this sort of Issi Mosa like sort of cadence and stuff, and they sound really sort of southern Central Africa. And then you've got the Jabari who are just like the most West African Nigerian people you see. And that, you know, that sort of reminds me of, I see M'Baku and I'm like, yo, that's my uncle after a couple of Guinnesses. So, I'm doing my PhD. No, you cannot speak here. You cannot speak now. Like, oh shit. And that's great. A lot of people, apart from the story itself and the narrative, they're seeing themselves in just every part of it, every aspect of it, the little things people do, the way they carry themselves, like all of it. And being able to see an Afro-futuristic country, which is supposedly embodies the best of Africa, and sort of the cast members have gone out saying, you know, this is what we hope Africa could be, an African country could be without the scourge of colonization. It's okay, they built trains. It's okay, you built, they run on time. You know, that's a beautiful thing, and that's a real great thing to connect people to it, and which is why I think in Wakanda there's a lot of different bits of Africa that are represented. You've got East Africa, Southern Africa, you've got, you know, clothing from Western Africa, North Africa, like you were saying earlier, black women working, you know, behind the camera in all these different roles, especially costume design. People went around the continent finding the best ways of showing these things. Even though it's meant to be an isolated country, it somehow is a melting pot of all these different cultures. And so I'm there looking at the film like, how did they get, like, Africa is very big. How did you get this specific cultural thing?
Oh, they've got spies out everywhere. They've got war dogs in every country.
But if I'm a war dog, and I'm there just looking around, why am I sending back Kente? You're like, Kente, God, why am I?
This is really in right now.
I'm like, oh, these people really love lip rings. The lip rings are really in. I didn't quite understand.
All the spies are just bringing back all the good stuff.
Why are the Jabari, like, I didn't understand why the Jabari were West African, like, because being isolated in the mountaintops does not give you a Nigerian accent. I'm just like, there is no mountain I know that has that amount of jollof and super malt.
Yeah. So we need to do some science. And I watched this film and I thought, you know what, I'd like to drink a potion and get super strength. So I spoke to Josiah Zander, who injected himself with a potion to give himself super strength.
So what I did was I used this technique called CRISPR, which is like the most terrible. The acronym stands for something that makes no sense and has no relation to what the technology is used for. But CRISPR is this, you know, cutting edge molecular biology technique that allows you to make changes in the genome of your cells. Rather, I don't want to say simply, but it's a lot easier than techniques before it. So a common experiment that they do with this CRISPR genome engineering is they'll mutate this gene in animals. This gene is called myostatin. What the myostatin gene does is if it's running, it keeps your muscles. It's a strange thing in the human body, but bear with me. It keeps you from making muscle, right? Because if you were making muscle all the time, you'd burn so many calories that you just constantly have to be eating food. So this gene actually suppresses your ability to make muscle. So when they make mutations to it in animals, you can find pictures online where these animals are just like, holy, can I swear?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, we encourage that.
Like, holy shit, these animals do look like, you know, they're ripped, like bodybuilders. And they do, you get increases in strength, you know, not just like looking muscly. It's kind of like the proof of concept experiment that they do in all animals. And so it was something that was well studied. I thought it's something that I could possibly explore if it works in myself. So what I did was I designed this, you know, genetic engineering CRISPR system to target my human myostatin gene instead of an animal one. And I took that and I mixed it with certain chemicals to help it penetrate the cells in my body and injected it just localized in the forearm. I just wanted to see if I would get local growth. These things, you don't necessarily want it in your full body because, for instance, your heart is also a muscle, right? So you can imagine if you start messing with your heart muscle and you get cardiac like hypertrophy, like that could possibly not be a good thing. So it was a localized injection in my forearm to see as like a proof of concept if I could get this to work. It wasn't necessarily to give me super strength or super muscles because I'm kind of the viewpoint that if I, you know, want muscles, I should just do some push-ups and sit-ups or something, right?
Yeah. But I say, so did it work?
No, so I haven't seen any, like, visible changes, you know, physically on my body. There could be a lot of reasons for that. Number one, I mean, it's an experiment, right? It's like nobody's done anything like this before. I mean, they have for medical treatments, right? So gene therapy has had a long history in medical treatments. We've been doing gene therapy in the world since like the late 80s, early 90s. And we've been able to treat a lot of medical diseases with gene therapy. But using it for cosmetic purposes is completely different. The amount of cells you need to edit to see changes and just how it's delivered and administered, how many times it's delivered and administered. There's no like data really on how this stuff should be used and done. So that was kind of one of the purposes for me trying this stuff out. So I measured, you know, the circumference of my forearm to see if it would change at all. I didn't really see much of a change. I did some tests on my DNA to see if the DNA in the cells changed. Unfortunately, the tests were pretty inconclusive. They showed that, like, there were changes in my normal cells as well as my, you know, CRISPR genetically modified cells, which is, I think that's a consequence of the assay that was used, the assay that people normally use, because they normally use it in, like, cells in a petri dish and not, like, actual animals. Or, you know, I guess I'm an animal. I imagine there's possibility, you know, some cells were edited, just it was not enough to actually see a physical change, and it's something that would need to be developed further.
Okay.
If somebody wanted to use this.
Okay, are you developing it further?
You know, so here's the thing. After I did this experiment, I started to think about more what could happen if we started doing human cosmetic genetic engineering and less like, well, what would happen if it worked on me? Right. So say I get this to work. Say I get my muscle to grow. What do I do next? Right. I can't like sell this to people, at least, you know, not with any moral and ethical values, you know, because like people, it needs to be properly purified. Like, right. There's certain things that it needs to be a certain quality if you're going to distribute it. And I could not produce it in that quality, you know, at any sort of scale or volume where it would be reasonable for me to sell. So I kind of transitioned to like, instead of trying to get something to work in me, because I can't like my whole life test out these things on myself,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I can't be like guinea pig for all cosmetic human genetic engineering. I transitioned to like, how do we get this so that we can make it available to people, right? What is the path that we need to follow if we want to make human cosmetic genetic engineering, you know, a thing? How do we make it available to people safe, and that it works, and that, you know, people want and can use it, and that they could actually see results from it. Yeah. And that's, I think, a more complicated path than just, you know, injecting myself, unfortunately.
I'm trying not to say this. I'm going to say it anyway. So I reckon if you could localize it, then there are parts of the body which you could make quite a lot of money if you could make them bigger.
You know, you should see the emails I get from people, and I've definitely got people who want to increase their penis size, you know. I get all sorts of crazy emails that you wouldn't even believe, and yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting area, right? Because you think about, you know, the lengths we go to look good, you know, cosmetically as human beings, exercise, go on diets, cosmetic surgery, you know, it's not something that you'd imagine is outside the realm. You know, people stick silicone implants in their body, you know, to have bigger breasts. And like, to me, that's crazy. That's way more crazy than like injecting yourself with some DNA that causes you to, you know, have a faster metabolism or bigger muscles or something like that.
This could be like an alternative to cosmetic surgery.
I can't see how it couldn't be, right? I can see a lot of ethical debates, moral debates, and maybe people starting to like have a little pushback against it. But it's like, I'm 37 now. I just turned 37. And like, you know, I have a little trouble keeping off the fat now, right? It's like, especially working all the time, running a business, eating out. And if you're telling me that I could get this injection of this DNA and it would increase my metabolism for 6 months or a year, like, fuck yeah, I'd do it, right? Like, yeah. if there was no downside, why not, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like, totally. Like, if there's no downside, yeah, absolutely. Are you a science fiction fan?
Oh, totally, right. Completely.
Okay. So, Black Panther, Wonder Woman?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So, right, in Wonder Woman, they take those vials, right, and make themselves super strong, okay? is that at all a reality? Is that kind of...
No, I mean, I think it totally is, right? And if you look at, like, it's so funny because, you know, like, modifying DNA has been, like, the central thesis of every origin story, kind of, for, like, all superheroes, right? Get bit by a radioactive spider. I don't know if that really modify your DNA, but, you know, maybe, or like get exposed to radiation or something in some way, or even with like, you know, the X-Men and things like that. Like, you know, they're born with different mutations. Mm. I don't know where this all can go, right? I don't know what are the lengths and extent to which human beings can modify themselves and have powers or whatever. You know, you look at like footballers, right? Like Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi or somebody like that. Like phenomenal athletes, like beyond what most us mere mortals could ever hope to do. Right? And I have no doubt that they have things in their genes that have allowed them to, or helped them to be superior. Probably not only genes, but I'm sure they do have some things in their genes. So what happens if you could also have it? Obviously, you're not going to be a Cristiano Ronaldo or something. You know, lots of training and practice and all the other stuff, but does it mean you, you know, wouldn't be able to run faster or jump higher or, you know, do certain things? You know, you probably could. How much that would be, I don't know. But, like, I think 100, 200 years from now, who knows where people would take stuff like this.
That's going to change the Olympics, though, right?
I mean, I'm sure people are already doing this. It, you know, so, like, that experiment I did, right? Obviously, it didn't work, but that was with CRISPR. There are other genetic engineering techniques that people have used for patients with, like, muscular dystrophy that have increased their muscle mass, like, 10, 15%. And you can imagine that you could just take the same treatment for somebody who doesn't have muscular dystrophy, use it, and the world, you know, Olympic governing body, they're not really testing for this stuff right now, so I could go to a company and have them make this treatment for me for like $5,000, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I can't imagine there's not people trying it. You can't screen for it.
Yeah. Now you seem quite relaxed, okay, but I'm slightly concerned that if you, we get you angry, you're going to turn green and start ripping your shirt off.
Let's try it out. Say something about my mother. Say something.
Why did you leave NASA?
NASA. You should don't ask my mom because she was like freaking out. Why would you leave NASA?
That's how I feel. That's exactly. I feel like your mom. Why did you leave NASA?
You know, when I was there, I was working on some cool projects, engineering organisms to help with like long-term space travel. So if people were to go to Mars and actually like colonizing Mars. So I was working on engineering these organisms to recycle things, to break down like plastics, to break down like, you know, fecal matter and stuff like that into resources that the astronauts could then reuse to like feed plants or like do other things.
Awesome.
It's really cool, but the technology is so far out, like, and the way that we do space travel is just so primitive that, like, it's more like something for, like, 2100 than it is for, like, 2020, because we're not yet at the place where we're going to have, like, vats of microorganisms on our spacecrafts that are, like, making food for us and stuff like that. I didn't think I wanted to spend the next, you know, 20 or 30 years at NASA hoping that funding stayed and, you know, everything worked out and, you know, all the bureaucracy that I had to deal with. So I decided, you know, I could probably try and get stuff done faster and better outside of NASA. And
I'll let you off on that one. I reckon. Did your mom let you off?
No. I think she's still bitter.
Well, if you're listening, Mom, it's all right. It's all right.
You should forgive him.
Yeah,
please forgive me, Mom.
And the other thing you could do, of course, is just biohack yourself so that you live for 200 years and then you can use your technology that you used at NASA on Mars and on your way to Mars. That's perfect.
Yeah, you can get Elon Musk to buy some shares in it as well.
Yeah. It's totally possible, you know. Maybe someday. My body's already wearing out. Yeah. I can't imagine being 200. Yeah. I'd just be like sitting there on a couch, and I'd have somebody like put a beer in my hand, like lift up my arms and to drink.
It's just be super muscly. Right?
Yeah.
No muscle deterioration.
I would be able to use them. I'd just be like sitting there all muscly on the couch.
It's like the bones have like gone.
Oh dear. Okay.
Sagging muscles.
What an image. On that image,
we should leave it. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
This was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome. I really appreciate having the time.
Cheers, mate. Alex, it says on your website that you're the best scientist turned rapper.
Okay. Blah, 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 rapping words. Rap. Rappy, rap. Okay.
A nerdy wordy rapper from South London. I bet it's me. I'm not in the top five. I better be. I got more range than Okoye and T'Challa. I got more range than the boy Killmonger. What would happen if he made a White Panther? You'd hate that. Thor had a fucking trilogy. Face packs. The Boy Who Lived. There's 7 books and only 5 blacks. But you've got a theme park resort thinking that you're unique. I know you're sore. You really want to say nigger, but you're scared of saying Voldemort. I mean, you get blocked. I hate that shit. Chatting me off Twitter. I'll hit you till your face splits like Claw Saw 4. I'm armed with 4 guns. Why the fuck you getting mad at Carl when it's all Lennies? On my armor, 2 10s, I'm rolling out natural 20s. Jaw dropping crit runs like a Prattman with pennies. I'm turning on you violent like first I Killmonger. My hair's more twisty than Luke, I am your father. I'd rather fix Ross like those getting me colonized. I'm taking shots at DC like Lee Harvey Columbine. If I roll to CBP, it'd be the 4th time. Hanging with Shuri, dry with fiber optic eyes. Any tech is optimized. Panther God mythologized. Treat the beat I beat vibranium. I monopolize. Use advance, and that's how I economize. Lazy out of Zuri, but I bet we philosophize. Killmonger coming for the throne. Democratize. Heart shaped herbs getting burned and then pollinized. And that's about it for my rap, but I can keep going if you like. I mean, what was your favorite bit about it?
Me? Oh, my favorite bit was the bit where the spaceships came.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, if I had to find a spaceship, I wouldn't have one of those Bugatti spaceships. I'd have like a Ford Focus one. Because in Wakanda, they don't show like the normal middle class guys. It's just like, well, I just want a nice little doer. They don't show the
run around.
Yeah, no run around. Yeah, first car. I want to know what the insurance is like in Wakanda. Really, that's just me. And you know, I'm just on one and the same, because I killed the PhD and now I gotta kill the rap game. I'll zoclone on you niggas. I'm waking up with back pain. I'm fucking around with hype girls. They want me to abstain. You call me Hank Hill because every flow is propane. That was a King of the Hill reference, anyway. I'm generating character like Stan Lee, Mesophocles. I'm balancing with humor. Call me hip hop's Hippocrates. I'll take your soul like I'm down with Mephistopheles. I'm taking what I'm owed. Did you clock the apostrophe? My cypher's grinding, grinding, man. They think they're topping me. I touched the nerve. Did I do a lobotomy? Make nerdy rappers copy me. They're thinking that they worry me. The heat death of the universe is the only thing that's stopping me. Needless to say, I don't know who you're fooling. Your cypher's an enigma. Well, that makes me Alan Turing. Man, the imitation game is you, man, learning by osmosis. That on these tracks, I can't pull back phimosis. And I won't change if they can't rate or shake me. My threats are like hotlines. They'll never break me. I'm needless to say, the rhyme is how I spend my days. But I'm like, probably Killmonger's girlfriend. Needless to say, that's about it for me. I'm done with the rap. I'm genuinely done this time. Like, yeah. I'm genuinely done.
Oh, right. Anyone want to say anything else about the film?
Oh. I liked where it turned into a Black Bond film.
I like that the girls were funny as well. And that's really rare.
Yes. I like that. I like that the women had comedic timing and they were all different. I like that there were strong black women on screen and they weren't sort of the how to get away with murder or scandal way of like, I'm strong and black and I've got my shit together, but also I'm a raging alcoholic.
Yeah.
I also loved the fact that the first act took place in Nigeria and had genuinely people speaking Hausa properly. I think that makes up for Civil War pronouncing Lagos Lagos.
Sterling K. Brown as T'Chaka's brother I thought was awesome, and that scene where Eric visits him in the ancestral plane was amazing.
I loved all of the narratives. I loved all of the sub narratives. I love the one thing I love the most is black people around the world going absolutely extra at the cinemas for this, and people getting mad at that. And it's like, bruv, you cosplayed up for Harry Potter for 7 films. Let us have this. Yeah. Also, the fact that the costume designers worked with the world builders to make everything so interesting, like the capes, actual shields. And you're like, yes, of course you don't need anything else. You've got fucking vibranium, of course you can make shields. Yes, you've got a rhino. You've got fucking Chekhov's rhino. Chekhov's rhino. Fucking look at that.
Yeah.
Like, of course, if you're an African country, you're not going to make something European. You're going to put fucking vibranium on a rhino.
Yeah. I also really loved the interaction between Wakabi and Okoye when he stands up to her and says, would you kill me? And she says, without hesitation. And he respects her enough to be like, yeah, she would kill me. I'm not going to try and fight this. And he just puts down his weapon and surrenders to her because he respects her so much for what she does and also as his partner that he's like, he just understands that.
It should be noted that the end battle basically ends with all the men on their knees at the spear tips of like 3 women who are about to fuck them all up.
It's amazing.
I loved the bit where Wakabi is like, yeah, look at me. I've got a rhino and it's got vibranium on it. What are you going to do? And then Okoye is like, oh, excuse me? And the rhino just stops.
I'm like, and it licks her face because it knows her.
Yeah, I'm like, my dog is exactly like me. Yeah. My girlfriend of, 10 years can be hitting me right now with my dog. It's like, yes, you do that. Yes, entirely you do that. Because that's how dogs, and I'm assuming rhino brains work.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, I love the fucking soundtrack.
Oh, Ludwig Göransson's music.
Yeah. So you've got,
so good.
Because I've loved him since he made Cul-de-sac for Childish Gambino, and the production, like, if, like me, you listen to obscure early mixtapes of rappers to see how they sounded when they started, so you feel a bit more motivated. You can see how the production quality massively improved when Ludwig jumped on, even though we all know that Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, is a tour de force, and I hope you have me back for the Han Solo movie.
Oh.
By which I mean the Lando movie.
With
some guy.
You are officially invited back.
Yes! But Ludwig, like, he's amazing. And then the fact that Kendrick did the entire soundtrack, it's just
Not just that, he was only meant to do one song for it, and then they showed him the film, and then he was like, and I will now do an entire album.
Of course, it was, like, it's incredible, the effect that that has, you know, we're really seeing, like, I love this term, I hate this term, but I'm going to use it, it's that new black renaissance, and it's truly great, and you get to feel part of something, something that was made for you, with you in mind, and anyone who's like, oh, well, maybe it should stand up for a film by itself. Why has it got to be about race? I would like you to, if you use Twitter, tweet me at Thermodynamics, and we can schedule a one-on-one, do it face-to-face, man-to-man, man-to-woman, man-to-anyone. And, yeah, we can go from there.
Okay.
Also, Scissor on the soundtrack is really good. All the Stars.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know any of the words to that song, but I like to sing them anyway.
Stars of Maria. Well, it does stand up as a film in its own right anyway, so, you know, whatever. Okay, listen, Ty, when's your book out?
I don't know yet. I think it's meant to be summer.
Okay.
Summer.
Hannah, how do we find your podcast?
Oh, the XX. You go onto YouTube and go to XX Science.
Alex, how do we find your podcast?
You can find it on anywhere that you listen to podcasts. It's called Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Because as an ethnic minority firstborn son, that is all I get asked. Why aren't you a doctor yet? I'll tell you why. Chronic depression. I'm kidding. It's because I do not like the sight of blood. I'm kidding. I love the sight of blood. It's
the best.
It's the poor pay. And we talk about comedy, science, what it's like being scientific and brown. It's a science podcast for people who don't generally love science. And it is the only podcast of science-iness with brown people on that has got to the iTunes top 10.
Yeah.
And Ty, thank you as always for joining me here.
It's all right.
Hannah and Alex, thank you so much for joining me here in the Cosmic Shed.
Thank you very much.
I love it.
And thank you to Josiah and Maddie for the conversation we had the other night. I'm not going to inject myself and try and become the Hulk. And thank you very much for listening.
Wakanda forever.
Goodbye. The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.